Maseches Mikvaos. Okay. A word first about texts, commentaries, and things like that. The text that most of you are going to work with is probably, I'm guessing, many using a Kahati, which I certainly have certainly no difficulties with you're using. It's a wonderfully smooth commentary that incorporates from many earlier commentaries and may be useful, especially when you're learning something for the first time. When you are, there are two issues that need to be addressed. I hope we get started some mikvahs today. One is a little bit, not an introduction to the Mishnah generally, just an introduction to texts. The text of Kahati is probably, I believe, is generally speaking the text of the Yachanu Boaz. It may be called the Vilna edition of the Mishnayos. And it is not a very good text, and that's not a critique of either, but it is a culmination of a long history of the text. You know, when you ask me to describe a history of the Mishnah text, so I would say it begins at some point as an oral text. I don't know how long it's oral, if it really ever stays oral. That's a big machlokas in the Tunas Chos and the Geras of Rosh Hashanah. But the Mishnah text is probably mostly completed with the Vilna edition. And that's the final redaction of the Mishnah. But actually, it's important to realize that a lot of things that happen in between. In other words, the Mishnah text that's promulgated by Rebbe Ubezdino, if I may call it that, is not the Mishnah text that exists probably by the end of the Amoraic period. There are changes that have been made in the Mishnah, some on purpose, some not. And there are situations where you can even tell that the stam of the Gemara had a different text of the Mishnah than the Amoraim had in front of them. And certainly when you get to the earliest manuscript of the Mishnah, which is Ksav Yad Kaufman, which is available online in two places, a lower resolution viewing of it can be had on the Hebrew University website, the collection of Talmudic manuscripts, where they have a bunch of Mishnah manuscripts, a bunch of Bavli manuscripts, and what do they have? They have some Tosefta, the photographs of the Tosefta manuscripts. It's all photographs there. Our lower resolution photographs of Ksav Yad Kaufman. It covers the entire Mishnah, Ksav Yad Kaufman. It was almost the work of one hand of scribes. It's probably 10th or 11th century, written in Italy, and it's very much as almost all our printed Mishnayos were until. All our Mishnayos were until later printed editions. It really represents the Eretz Yisrael tradition of the Mishnayos. If you search online for M.S. Kaufman, Budapest, you will find immediately the link to the library in Budapest that has put up the entire Kaufman collection. David Kaufman was a scholar and collector of Judaica in early 20th century Hungary. And lots of stuff is up there, including, I think it's A50, is the Mishnah manuscript. And if you want to see high-resolution color photographs that you can zoom in on, much better than what there's a book of photographs, which is the stuff that Hebrew U put up, which is not very good. It's hard to see some stuff clearly. The high-resolution color photographs are absolutely phenomenal. If anyone is really dying for them, someone burned copies. Someone wrote a macro to download and burn copies for me onto DVD because they take a lot of space, these the high resolution photographs, if you're really interested. But anyway, it's easily accessible online. Ksav Yad Kaufman is one of the most important witness to the Mishnah text. It's also by far the most important witness to how Mishnaic Hebrew was once pronounced. Very, very interesting. One other manuscript I'll mention, I won't say anymore, that it seems to be a child of Ksav Yad Kaufman, available online at Hebrew U. Again, a very important textual witness, is Parma 138. Again, same provenance, probably within 100 years of Kaufman. We know pretty much as a late 11th century manuscript. The next important thing to be aware of is the first printing of the Mishnah, which was the Fusnapoli. It was done in Naples, I think approximately 1492, I forget the exact year. And that is the first place. It still looks very much like the manuscripts, but that begins a long tradition, the Fusnapoli, of starting to change the Mishnah text to look more and more like what the Bavli had or what the Bavli seems to have. And there are a lot of Babylonian traditions and changes that are made based upon the Gemara, based upon the Talmud Bavli, to the text of the Mishnah. So when you look at our final versions of the Mishnah, our Vilna edition, a lot of changes have happened since the manuscript period. One of the classic cases that we know of, and you can see it's fascinating, is the fourth parak of Bava Metzia. Does anyone know what the name of the fourth parak of Bava Metzia is? Before Ezehu Neshech? Perek HaZahav. If you look in the Bavli, in Perek HaZahav, the Bavli says that when Rebbe was young, he taught in his Mishnah that HaKesef Kones HaZahav, which means the Perek should have been named Perek HaKesef. However, later, Bizkenusa, Rebbe changed his mind, and he taught, Hazahav Koneas HaKesef. Now, if you look in Saviad Kaufman, and you look in Saviad Parma, and you look in your printed Yerushalmi even, you will see that the fourth perek of Mishnayis Bava Metzia is Perek HaKesef. In Bavli printings, and in the Mishnayis, the later printings of Mishnayis, it will be Perek HaZahav. We have both Nuschos of Rebbe's Mishnah, and most of the Kisveyad represent the Eretz Yisrael tradition, and hence it's known as Perek HaKesef. There's one other place in Shas where the Gemara makes the same distinction that Rebbe had two Nuschos, be Naruso, or be Alduso, or be Zkenuso. It's a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yomi probably will do it, or did it recently, about whether or not a Jew can be Mevatel, whether or not the Avodah Zarah of a Jew, I think, has bitul al yidei Nachri. I think that's what was the machlokas. The Lemaskonas Habavli, later Rebbe's old later tradition, is that Avodah Zarah Shei Yisrael never has bitul. But I think the earlier tradition is that a goy is mevatel Avodah Zarah Shelo v'shel Yisrael. This is very important, halacha lemaisa. And I believe that the Mishnayis and the Yushalmi and in the manuscripts read like Rebbe's Naruso. The Bavli's Mishnah, the Mishnah that's printed in our, that you will find in your standard text, reads like the later version. So anyway, I'm not going to say more about the Mishnah tradition, but in terms of the Mishnahs that you're looking at, be aware that there often are very important Shinui Nuschos that have impact upon the meaning of the Mishnah. In the Vilna edition, the classic, I think it's called the Vilna edition again, the Yachanu Boaz Mishnayis, you should be aware of the commentaries that are there. I will go backwards and explain what the other commentaries are also. But throughout Shas, the two main commentaries that are printed sometimes even in the non-Vilna edition are the Rav, Rav Ovadya Mibar Tanura, which I think is 16th century, and Tosus Yontov, Rav Yontov Lipman Heller, who also wrote some of the commentaries on the Rush, like the Madana Yom Tov, and the Pilpul HaRifta, I think, is also from the Tosus Yontov. So he was, I think, 16th or 17th century Prague. Someone wrote a book recently, and the Lippmann is part of the Lippmann series about the intellectual biography of Rav Yomtov Lippmann Heller. Very, very interesting. He is related to or contemporary, almost contemporary, the Maharal Prague. A lot of very interesting stuff. So those are the two main commentaries. A much later commentary, 19th century, was written by, I think, Rav Yisrael Lipschitz, the Tiferes Yisrael. It's not a great commentary in many ways, and I will tell you, it's shocking to me, but in the Kalkelas HaShabbos, which is the Pharisee Yisrael's introduction to Mishnah Shabbos with a lot of halachos, there are some black and white errors in there. I remember asking Rav Schechter about some of these things, and he said, yeah, it's just not correct. You don't find stuff quite like that in the Tosfos Yontov. I never encountered stuff where you just look and say it's just mamish an error. I mean, I'm not saying he wasn't the great Talmud Chacham, but anyway, the Tiferes Yisrael printed two commentaries on the bottom called the Yochin Uboaz. I forget one of them. One of them is much smaller comments, really directly tied in the Mishnah. There are numbers in the Mishnah, and they appear on the and footnotes on the bottom. And I think that's the Yochin, and the Boaz is a much longer. It's really a much longer essays on individual issues that he has. It's named obviously Yochin or Boaz, the two pillars of something in the Shlomo's palace or the Mikdash. I forget which it is. It comes from Malachim, those terms, the two pillars. On the sides, you'll have other. There are other commentaries printed as well. The sharpest of the commentaries is probably Tosfos Rabbi Akiva Eiger. But here I mentioned these commentaries because there are Shinui Nuschaos there. There's Shinui Nuschaos, which are important. It is not a comprehensive, a critical edition by any stretch of the imagination. And the manuscripts available to the author who wrote the Shinui Nuschaos, this is written, I think, 1870s or around that time, are very, very limited. He has only one really useful manuscript that I'm aware of immediately there, which is Ksaviad Cambridge. Ksaviad Cambridge, there are only three complete texts of the Mishnah. Now, by the way, on the Bechina, you'll be asked to regurgitate all this information. I'm just kidding. You get what you get. It's okay. If you're interested, you can follow up on it. If not, it's okay to humor me. Ksaviad Cambridge, there are only three complete manuscripts of the Mishnah without any commentary of the Rambam in them. Parma, two I mentioned before, Ksaviad Kaplan and Ksaviad Parma 138, and then a later manuscript, which seems to be of the same provenance, is 15th century Ksaviad Cambridge. A scholar, Israel Lowy, discovered this in the second half of the 19th century. He thought he had discovered America, and he called this the Mishnah Asher Nosad Alea Talmud HaYushalmi. And it got eventually called Masnisa de Mema Rava. He was correct in noting that a lot of the things in this manuscript, I mean, it looks at many of the weird readings in Kaufman appear in this manuscript, strangely enough. he realized that this looked much more like the Eretz Yisrael tradition of the Mishnayos. So you will see, that's the only really good manuscript that the Shinui Nischos on the side of the Yachanu Boaz has. He calls it, I think, he might call it, he calls it Ksav Yad Kuf, Ksav Yad Cambridge, or Masnisa the Bnei Ma'arava. But there are useful Shinui Nischos on the side, including even to the first printed edition of the Mishnah. The first printed edition of the Mishnah was much cleaner. There were far fewer of these Bavliizations that were introduced into the first printing, but it was over time that eventually everything gets leveled. For those of you who are briskers and are really curious to see a parallel phenomenon, if you read the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah in manuscript, and you read what the printers did mostly in lands of Ashkenaz, or even in Italy, but not technically Ashkenaz, if you look what the printers did to the text of the Rambam in Hilchos Brachos, where the Rambam provides you with all the Nuschaos, basically what they did was they changed the Rambam to read like Nusach Ashkenaz. It's really interesting. You look at Nusach Birchas HaTorah, you can even see from the Hagos Maimonios in the standard printed edition that he wasn't working with our printed text of the Rambam. He had something much more akin to what the Rambam actually wrote. But there's this tendency that if it's not, you all know the classic one, right? The Rambam in, when he lists the Parsha breaks from the Aleppo Codex, from the Ksav Yad of Ben Asher, right? So the Rambam says that he talks about the manuscript of Ben Asher, and he says that there are 70 lines in the Shira. So Kasuto, when he got access in Syria before 1948, it was in the early 40s when the Syrian Jewish community let him see it. Well, Mark, this is the chait of your ancestors, that they should have let him take it. But who knew? So when he looked at it, you know the story, he looked at it and said, he came back and said this was not what the Rambam used. Why? Because the Rambam says that there are 70 lines in the Aleppo Codex, and in fact, in the Aleppo Codex, in Shiras Hazinu, and in Shiras Hazinu, our Shiras Hazinu, in the Aleppo Codex, there are only 67 lines. Well, P.S., if you look in the Huntington manuscript of the Rambam, I think Lyman, it's not the first one, but Lyman collects this material, in the Huntington 80 manuscript where the Rambam, actually, he didn't write the manuscript, but he checked it, he made corrections to it. The Huntington 80 manuscript, the Rambam said 67 lines in the Shira Hazinu. But somebody in the 15th, 16th, or 17th centuries, or something like that, knew that there were 70 lines in our Sefer Torah and Hazinu. So he just changed the Rambam. He corrected the Rambam, so it was right. Meanwhile, Ben Kasuto reached the erroneous conclusion that it couldn't have been the Aleppo Codex the Rambam was talking about, because the Rambam says 70 lines. The Rambam didn't say 70 lines. So that happened a lot. And the Mishnah fitting in with the Bavli, the same thing happens. Okay. Other commentaries, earlier commentaries, and that in some sense more significant commentaries, again, you'll permit me a little bit of the hock here. There are certain tshuvos in the issue we're about to broach in halacha about the prolapsed uterus, about the makor shenafal. So the Noda Behuda starts, I believe, his introduction to this with the, I'll call it the modern Orthodox method of psak. Okay, now I don't say that's a pejorative, but he says that when he paskins halacha, the Noda Behuda, he doesn't like to look at what all the achronim wrote. For him, achronim means authorities between the Shulchan Aruch and his time. He likes to go back to the Gemaras, to the Rishonim, to the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, if you read in the very same topics the Chasam Sofer, I think it takes a jab at the Noda Behuda, because the Chasam Sofer says you have to look at all the contemporary poskim right as well. He doesn't, he's obviously, Noda Behuda is one of the early lengthy, you know, elaborations on this topic, and I think the Chasam Sofer is taking a little bit of a dig. This is an old machlokas about general nature psak halacha. In some ways, it's almost the machlokas between the Mechaber and the Ramah, whether you go back to the source or you go back to recent minog and recent poskim. And even the Ramah himself, if I recall correctly, I haven't read it in a few years, the Ramah in his introduction makes, I think to the Shulchan Aruch, makes it sound like in his earlier days, he wanted the paskin Mechaber type style. You know, going back to the early Rishon of Ashkenaz, and he took a lot of heat for it, because you really have to look at the recent Sifrei Minhagim and so on, which ultimately becomes the Ramah's M.O. So this tension about sort of, I'll call it original intent and early sources versus contemporary Minhag is an old tension. So even in terms of Parshanut HaMishnah, the question is, do you like sort of the later Mefarshim on the Mishnah, or do you go back early? So I have to admit that my bias, which might be true in Psak Halacha too, to the extent that I actually Paskan Halacha, is to look early rather than look late. Avi? Yeah. What's that? I can't say that's true in Psak Halacha, because in Psak Halacha, I don't have the gumption to disregard what the later authorities wrote. In terms of Parshanut, yes, I certainly am Madif Rishonim. You'll almost never hear me quote Achronim in terms of interpreting a Gemara in Shir, just not where, you know, my tendencies lie, even reading the Gemara in its own terms without Rishonim, and certainly if I'm Madif interpreters, it's Rishonim, because I think they're closer to Pshat in many ways. So anyway, in terms of early commentaries, if you look in the back of the Vilna Shas, commentaries to Mishnayos Zrayim and Mishnayos Taros are printed in the Vilna Shas on those Mishnayos that we don't have Gemara on. So all of Zra minus Brachos and all of Taros minus Nida, you have in the back printed two major, very important early commentaries. One is the commentary of the Rash, and one is the commentary of the Ram. The commentary of the Rash is Rabbeinu Shimshon of Sens, or the Rash Mishans, he was, by the way, one of the major Balei Tosos. Most of our Tosos are Tosos HaRashba, Rabbeinu Shimshon ben Avram, I got to remember who the other Rashba, Rav Shlomo ben Idrat. So Rav Shimshon and Avram, our Stam Tosos are Tosos HaRashba. When you see Rashba quoted on Tosos, it's not the Rashba of Spain, it's the earlier Rashba, the Baal HaTosfos. So that's the commentary of the Rashba, which is like having a Tosfos on these Mishnayos, which is really, really useful. The Rashba is also incredibly useful on the Mishnayos because he also incorporates a commentary on Eli, the Tosefta. It's probably the earliest commentary on Tosefta because he quotes right and left the Tosefta from Zrayim and from Taros, and then he explains. It also provides alternate nuschos. If you want to know other nuschos of the Tosefta, which is a very poorly preserved text, you can use Rishonim to get those texts, and if you're lazy and don't want to look through all the Rishonim, you just pick up one of Rav Shaul Lieberman's earlier text, the Tosefta Rishonim, where he collects from the Rishonim other Nuschos in the Tosefta. So the Rash is an incredibly useful commentary. It is lengthy. It's a little bit like reading Tosfos, but it's also good because if you want to get the standard Tosfos read on Gemara, on many of the major issues, you'll find parallel Tosfos and Shas. You want to do is Mayim Shuv and Psula Midoraisa Midorabanan, which is a big discussion in Rishonim. You'll get it sometimes in Tosfos and Shas. You also get it in the Rash, you know, in probably Mishnayos Mikvos. And so it's incredibly, incredibly useful in many ways, the commentary of the Rash. It is very long. There is also the commentary of the Rambam, the Perush HaMishnayos, which is also it's a very different kind of commentary. Its great usefulness is its brevity of really cutting to the chase and giving you one way of reading the Mishnah. He doesn't provide the plethora of options that later commentators or even the Rash will actually give you. I don't know the exact dates on the Rash and the Rambam, but neither one sees the other's. I'm pretty sure neither sees the other's commentary. One major deficiency in the Rambam's commentary, it's not Chas V'Shalom in the commentary, it's in the translation. Not all translations were created equal. The beginning of the Rambam's commentary, the translation, I believe, was done by Ibn Tibbon. And Ibn Tibbon is probably the best translator of the Rambam because he's a contemporary. He knows the Rambam's Arabic as well as anybody today possibly could know it. He's familiar with contemporary idiom. But Ibn Tibbon did not finish anyway, they didn't even finish the first Seder. He goes, I think, through somewhere in Trumos is where he finished. And other people completed the commentary, including many works that were done in Spain 2 centuries later, southern France, northern Spain, where their Arabic left something to be desired, number one. And number two, where people sometimes decided to interpret the Rambam, to rewrite the Rambam so that it conformed to the Bavli. And other types of understandings. It is a problem. It's something you have to deal with. The way you get around that problem is by using Rav Kapach's edition of the Perush HaMishnayos. Some people may be a little critical more in other areas of whether or not he gets all the nuances of the Rambam, but I think for the Perush HaMishnayos, everybody would agree that is the best option. Note also that Rav Kapach's translations are based upon not just his own Yemenite tradition, which generally is very good. If Yemenite scribes were better than Ashkenazi or Sephardi scribes at preserving text. I've worked with Mishnah manuscripts of parts of the Mishnah, looking at the Rambam's autograph of the Mishnah, a word on that in a moment, and seeing the Yemenite copies, and it's letter for letter, except for occasionally they'll abbreviate Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai or things like that. But it is unbelievable, it's almost like a Xerox. To look at the Yemenite, the copies from 4 centuries later, you know, of the Rambam's Perush HaMishnayos. Now, the blessing we have for the Rambam's Perush HaMishnayos is that we have, for large parts of the Perush HaMishnah of the first 5 Siddurim, we have the Rambam's autograph. I don't mean his signature. I mean his copy of the Mishnah text and his Perush HaMishnayos in Judeo-Arabic, which is what he wrote it in, for the first 5 Siddurim. Not only that, but we have the additional bonus, and I think I mentioned this here before, is that the Rambam, sometimes when there are differences between the translation into Hebrew, the standard translation that's printed in the Vilna Shas and Rav Kapach's translation, sometimes when there's a difference between what the Rambam says in one and the other, it's not because the translators of the earlier translation were bad. It's because they were copying off an earlier version of the Rambam's Perush HaMishnayos, and the Rambam later changed his mind, erased what he wrote or crossed it out, and wrote something new. If you look in the Rambam's actual autograph, you can often see what he crossed out and then what he wrote on top of it. Rav Kapach points this out right and left in his footnotes. So in the Rambam's Perashat Mishnayos, not only do we have the Rambam first edition, we sometimes have the Rambam second and third edition, and we can tell exactly where the Rambam changed his mind. You don't have to do this yourself. You can see, I think they put Moed and Nashim, I think, of this manuscript of the Rambam. I think it's Ksaviat Sassoon. It was owned by once upon a time by the Sassoon family, a very wealthy philanthropic Sephardi family. I don't think they've done Nezikim, but I believe Moed and Nashim are online at the Hebrew U, the digitized book repository, so you can actually just download the whole thing if you want to see that. If you're interested in seeing other parts or you can't find it, downloading it, the library in the rear book room has the facsimile edition of the Rambam's autograph. Okay, so you have the Rambam and the Rash are two major commentaries. Then you also have printed in the back of the Vilna Shas, the Perush of the Rush. And I forget what else. You have some other commentaries I'm not very familiar with, something like Marib and Malki Tzedek or something like that. One other very interesting commentary to note, which is not printed in the back, but which is accessible, but you'd have to know to look for it there. I don't think it's on all of Mikvos, but on large parts of Mishnayos and Mikvos, or significant chunks, the Ravid wrote a commentary. Do you know where that commentary is printed? Where it was written? It was written in the Ravid's Balei HaNefesh. In the Shaar HaMayim, which I think is the last big Shaar, maybe second to last Shaar, I think. In the Shaar HaMayim, when the Ravid does Hilchos Mikvos, so basically he decides to incorporate into it a perush on large chunks of Meseches Mikvos. So there is another very important commentary from the period of the Rishonim, but it's not printed on the Mishnayot, it's embedded on the Ravid's Balei HaNefesh. Any other commentaries I'm missing that everybody should know about? Okay.
You didn't mention
the Bartanura. I mentioned it very quickly. Rav Adyumi Bartanura, which is, again, I said early, I think 16th century, it's a pretty brief commentary, but it's sort of it's the classic commentary. It's rare to find Mishnah is printed without it. In fact, Kahati, if you think about it, was printed, the early Kahati version. Somebody have a Kahati here? Hold it up, Daniel, with the pages open. That has, I believe, now the Rav. I grew up with a Kahati where there was no Rav in it. It was just Kahati. But, you know, I guess by popular demand, you know, Kahati, the Rav is back. There are editions called the Ikar Tosfos Yontav where they print the Rav and the Ikar Tosfos Yontav. I really am very suspicious of Perushim like that because somebody had to decide what was the Tofa and what was the Ikar, and my decision might not be the same. Kayotze Bazeh, we will see, God willing, in a few weeks, the introduction of the Darkei Moshe, the Ramaz Beis Yosef. And what happened to the Ramah is that in the middle of writing his Darkei Moshe, there are all sorts of legends made up about this, you know, how somebody needed to write a Beis Yosef and it was between three Zakenim and Eretz Yisrael and the Mechaber was picked to do it. There are lots of interesting stories. I suspect they're all legend. The Ramah, and the Mechaber was told that somebody in Ashkenaz, in I don't know if he was told where in Ashkenaz, was on his way doing this, that the Beis Yosef better hurry up. It's true, the Ramah was working on a Beis Yosef type commentary and then in the middle of his commentary, the Beis Yosef was published and the Ramah had to decide what to do. Our Darkei Moshe printed in standard editions of the tour is the Kitzur of the Darkei Moshe that somebody was Makatzer. Unfortunately, whoever was Makatzer, it sometimes made mistakes and left out really important things that creates misleading impressions. So I'm always a little suspicious of Iker of anything because that's always somebody else's distillation, but that's the way it is. But the Rav sort of remains as like the Rav is almost like the Rav on Mishnah is almost like Rashi and Chumash. Not quite, but almost. Okay. Fine. Okay. So, and no more questions about that. Let's at least start the Mishnah Mikvos. The Mishnah states, Sheish Malos Bamikvos. There are six levels in terms of bodies of water that sit in the ground. In terms of A, their susceptibility to tuma, and B, their ability to be metaher other things. Zolamala mizo, vizolamala mizo. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention one very important addition. For those of you who are inclined towards A, pshuto shel mishnah, B, a very clear text, C, a properly vocalized text, and D, a text that will incorporate some elements of mechkar in it, that's implied partially by pshat, the Mishnah text is that of Professor Chanoch Albeck, Zichrono Livracha. And Professor Albeck, who was a fine scholar, any fine Talmud Chacham. He was, the truth is, the best minds in Mechkar typically are products of the Beis Medrash in most cases. Because in order to be really good at it, you also have to know a lot of Torah. And it's rare to find someone not a product of the Beis Medrash who has the range in Torah in order to be able to do both Torah and do Mechkar in Torah really well. That's why people like Professor, whatever you want, I'm not taking a stand at it, Rav Shaul Lieberman, Professor Shaul Lieberman, I usually call him Professor Lieberman, it's not meant out of disrespect, but that was his title at the seminary. People like Yaakov Nachum Epstein, people like Hanoch Albeck, these were all giants, early giants of Mechkar. They were all products, probably European Batei Medrash, and they knew a ton of texts before they went and did their work. They had learned in traditional settings. Even someone like Professor Halivni, who certainly knows a lot of Torah, whether you like his methodology or not, or anything else, is the product of, you know, in his youth of your Hungarian yeshivas, he had a smich in Hungary before he, you know, at 19 before he came here, whatever it is. So in order to be really good, to be good at this, one of the sine qua nons is you have to just know a lot of Torah first. It's one of those unfortunate things for people in the academy. So this is the addition. There's usually an introduction to the Masechta where he will do like what you see in Kahati. He'll present sort of basic Pesukim, basic Makoros. There are appendices with some very important issues, Mechkar type issues. And the commentary is basically very much a pshat commentary. So sometimes when you read the commentary and you get interpretations, even of Rishonim that seem very stretched, it's worth looking at Albeck. If you're learning the Beis Medrash, I'm not holding it when you're doing Mikvos. The Xerox usually sits at my Malcolm. The library also has a copy or two or something like that can be taken out. The edition, Albeck's edition, the most interesting volume is the first one, which is the Mavo. It has a lot of very useful things in it. Number one, his theory of the redaction of the Mishnah, and then it has a lot of very useful appendices, which are like lexicons of Hebrew words in the Mishnah that either were not in Biblical Hebrew or were in Biblical Hebrew but have a new meaning in Mishnaic Hebrew, or Greek words, Greek foreign loan words appear there as well, some very useful appendices as well. So it's worth knowing about Albeck's edition. So now the vocalization of the edition was based upon, done by Hanoch Yalon, who was one of the Gedolim of Lashon in the 20th century in Israel. So if you want to know the proper vocalization of Mishnah, and I suspect a lot of Kahati probably is taken from this, this is the place to look. It's not always identical to Kaufman. One interesting thing that I saw over Yom Tov, what is the thing that you say in Hashanos? Ani va Ho, Hoshiana. If you look in the Sack Sitter, it says Aniva Hu Hoshiana. So I looked at this and I was scratching my head. So I went back and looked at the photographs of Kaufman and Parma 138. They both have Aniva Hu Hoshiana with an aleph in it. I didn't have a chance to look at the Bavli Sugyas to see if there's anything clear. I was shocked to see, and I don't know why, I was shocked to see that that Albeck has vocalized Aniva Ho Hoshiana. I don't know quite, I haven't figured out what's going on yet with this. I haven't had time to look further. But this is a very reliable text if you're learning how to vocalize Mishnaic Hebrew. Okay. So the Mishnah says, Sheish Malos Bamikvos is Olam Alamizo, is Olam Alamizo. The first one is Me Gevaim. Geve is best translated, I prefer to translate as a puddle. Now, if you have a puddle in the ground, so the certain dinim apply to it. We're going to read them very briefly. The central question you have to ask is, how is this different than having a puddle in a kli? Now, what's the difference between having a small amount of water in the ground and a small amount of water in a kli? Now, just a piece of general background information to mikvaos, which we are going to discuss later in this in the Masechta. I mentioned this earlier. Mayim she'uvim. What are mayim she'uvim? Roni? Water that was drawn. Now the din is that mayim she'uvim are no good for tevila. There is a very, very, very big machlokas harishonim. Chachmei Svarad versus some of Chachmei Ashkenaz versus others of Chachmei Ashkenaz as to whether the psul of mayim she'uvim in a mikvah is d'oraisa or only the rabbanon. Some of Chachmei Ashkenaz say that the psul of mayim she'uvim is d'oraisa, meaning if I have a hole in the ground and I fill it with water using kelim, any kinds of vessels, that is mikvah, is pasul midoraisa. Most Rishonim, I think, the Rambam, I think it's pretty widely held in Chachmei Svarad, and even some of Chachmei Ashkenaz say that the psul of mayim she'uvim is only the Rabbanan. Why then did the Chachamim make a gzeira on it? After all, it makes life so difficult. The answer is they were gozer unto a situation where tefillah is no good, where mayim shuvim are psulim midaraisa, and that is namely in a kli. If you have a large bathtub detached from the ground, just sitting on top of the ground, and you fill that with 40 sa of water, if it holds 40 sa, that is pasul midaraisa. Tefillah cannot be done in kelim l'chulei alma. Tefillah must be done in the karka, or something that has the din of karka. So some Rishonim say that the only psul of mayim shuvim daraisa is in a kli itself, doing tefillah there, and the gzera against mayim shuvim generally is a gzera atu tefillah bekelim. Other Rishonim say that no, that if a majority, everybody agrees that the psul of three lugan of mayim shuvim is only drabanan, but there are chachmei Ashkenaz who say, some of chachmei Ashkenaz who say, that if a majority of a mikvah is sha'uv, is mayim shuvim, then the mikvah is psula midaraisa. So clearly, on some level, there's a difference between mayim in a kli and mayim in the karka. So the question then you have to ask is, what is the difference between this mayim that's a puddle on the ground versus a puddle, you know, if I had a puddle on this or a puddle in my cup, then what is the difference between those two? So first we're going to read the din of the Mishnah, and I will leave you in suspense, but there's a basic machlokas, the Rambam and the Rash, how to understand this dinim of the first several Mishnayos. The Mishnah says as follows. If you have a geva is a word, a biblical Hebrew word. It's quoted in the Mishnah in Shabbos, v'lachsof mayim migeva, to scoop water out of a puddle. So if you have megeva, megevaim, so shasa tame v'shasa tahar tame. If someone who's tame drinks from this water, and then someone who's tahar drinks from the water after him, that person becomes tame. Now, for those of you familiar with the basic laws of Tumah V'Tahara, this is, of course, very difficult to understand. Because if a person who's tame drinks from the water and he makes it tame, what level of tumah is that water on? There's only one possible level. If someone is tame and touches water or food, what can that possibly be? It cannot be more than what? Chesky?
Well, it cannot be more than a Rishon.
It cannot be more than a Rishon L'tumah. It cannot be an Avatumah. Why not? Let's say a dead person decides to die in a puddle. So you might not want to drink the water, okay. But if a dead person intentionally dies in a puddle, and assuming that water is... what is the most that water could be? Well, he's an Avi Avos HaTumah. So what would the Tame person be? What would the tame water be, excuse me? The answer is it can't be more than a Rishon L'tumah, because there's a rule that anything that cannot be purified in a mikvah through tevila cannot become an avatumah. There are three things that cannot be immersed. I use that term tevila very carefully. That cannot be immersed in a mikvah, or the tevila is not mitahir them. Number one is ochlim. Number two is mashkin. And number three are klecheres. Anything that cannot be purified in a mikvah cannot become an avatumah. And thus, if they are touched by something that would normally make certain things more than a Rishon L'tumah, they just drop down to the level of Rishon L'tumah. So if a tameh person drinks the water, how is it possible that a tahor person drinking after him becomes tameh? Because after all, what can the water be at most? A Rishon L'tumah. If I touch a Rishon L'tumah, what do I become? Nothing. Why not? Because a person, and a kli, midoraisa at least, cannot become anything less than a Rishon L'tumah. A person or a kli who touches a Rishon L'tumah is tahor. However, there was a day in Jewish history, a sad day, in which they took account in the Beis Medrash, and Beis Shammai outnumbered Beis Hillel. One of the Beis Shammai spies was counting and said, ah, there are more of us. So they grabbed control of the agenda, and they ruled on 18 things and took a vote, and Beis Shammai outnumbered Beis Hillel. Shmona asar davar gazru babayom, according to the Mishnah and Shabbos. Unfortunately, the Mishnah and Shabbos does not tell us what the 18 things were. It's left to the Gemara to tell us. So amongst many of the things that they were gozer on that day, Beis Shammai was a little bit, they were all a little bit preoccupied with Tumah V'Tahara, but Beis Shammai particularly, and they were gozer a number of situations, the Rabbanan, where a person becomes Tameh with respect to Truma. And one of those situations was a Tahar person who drinks Mashkim Temeim becomes Tameh. Even though the Mashkim are only, and most the Rishon L'tumah, they would gozer anyway. You know why? Because there's only one form of Mashkim Temeim that can be an Avatumah. You know what that is? Roko Shel Zav. the saliva of a zav, the mashkim of a zav, or nida of a yoledas, those mashkim sometimes can be an avatuma. Now, I know most people would not drink them, it's true. You would not drink anybody's saliva. However, it became relevant in another context, which was, well, I don't even know if that was, I take that back. That may not be even for someone who drinks mashkim tmeim. That's why mashkim tmeim are metame akli. Even if they're only a rishon latumah, they're metame akli, because if they were roko shelzav, they'd be an avatumah and it could be metame akli. I'm not sure exactly why they were, part of the same gzeira was that if you drink mashkim tmeim, you also become tame for truma purposes. Shasa mashkim tmeim is tame. So if a tame drinks from these waters first, he makes them tame somehow. We have to talk about that mechanism next week. Now when a tahar drinks from them, the tahar has drank mashkim tmeim, and therefore he is tame for truma purposes. Similarly, shasa tame, umile becheli tahar, tame. If a tame drinks, say it's the same scenario initially. The tame drinks, now either a tahar drinks, or someone uses a tahar kli and fills water with that, the kli is tame. Why? Because mashkim tameim are metame a kli. Why? Gzera atu ruko roko shelzav. Finally, shasa tame, vinofal kikar shelat truma, if someone's tame drinks from it again, and now a kikar of truma falls in, anything of truma, okay? Now, if im hediach tame, vim lo hediach tahar, if you took that opportunity to wash off the loaf, because now that it fell in the water, you may as well like rub the water around to rinse it clean, or you, let's say your fruits or something like that. So that means that those mashkim were in effect l'ratzon. And many of you know the din, that in order for any food to be mekabel tuma, it must come in contact with water, l'ratzon ha'adam, or any of the shiva mashkim. So if water falls on your food, which is not yet susceptible to be mekabel tuma, it's not musha l'kabel tuma, and you didn't want it to happen, and you just dry it off, the food item is not mekabel tuma. It's not tame, and it's not mekabel tuma. However, if you did want it, even if you did it on purpose, or after it happened, you were glad it happened, you know, while it was there, so then it's moshe lekabel tuma. And if the mayim, if the mashkim were tmeim, it's machshir and metame at the same time. So by this loaf of bread, this loaf of truma, if you don't want it there, and so if you do want it there, mehidiyah, so then the mashkim are both machshir, the kikar shel truma, and metameh at the same time. If, however, you don't want it there, im lo hediach, so then it's tahar because the mayim tmeim cannot do their work here. And I believe that then is true even if the kikar was already moshe lekabel tuma. Even if it's moshe lekabel tuma, the mayim tmeim do not make it tameh shelo l'ratzon. And we're going to have to talk about why, but we'll leave that for next week. I'm not going to read right now the next two Mishnayos, but it's the same scenario as repeated over and over. This really looks like the product of oral recitation. Because if I asked you to memorize the Mishnayos, all eight Mishnayos of the first parak, it would go a lot faster than you realize. Okay. Any questions so far? I'll take your question in a second. Be aware there may be a little bit of a learning curve. Please do not be shy about asking questions. How many of you have learned all of Seder Taras? How many of you have learned, that's two, how many significant chunks of Seder Taras? Okay, so if you haven't, a lot of the basic, even if you learn Seder Taras once, even if you forgot almost everything you learn, you will be familiar with the core dinim. You know, if you want to read a quick introduction, read Kati's introduction to Kalim and to Olos, and that will give you a lot of information. But I will try to my best to not assume that you know anything about Tumah V'Tahara. I don't consider myself by any means a baki in Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. But I have learned Seder Taras a couple of times. But I will try to make sure to provide you, as we needed, all the background information. Kahati tends to do that a lot in terms of his introductions to Mishnayos, introductions to Prakim, introductions to Masechta, so you might want to read that. But there is going to be a little bit of a learning curve. Chesky?
I just had two issues in terms of this last discussion about how the water is in the tummy of the person. First of all, it could just be a rhetorical model, but the parish of the Brat Tenura, a little later in the parak, when he was talking about the second level of
May Tamsir Shalo Pascu?
Yeah, Tamsir Shalo Pascu. It indicated that the water, there's such a thing as Tavila for the water.
I was, Paderman smiled because he and I discussed this already, and I knew why. There's something called Hashaka Lamayim. It's not Tavila. The Rishonim in this Perek speak in terms of, and even the Rav repeats it, talks about Tavila. You know, a Tavila works only for Mayim there, And the Tosfos Gentil just writes in a quick one-liner, he says, he doesn't know what they're talking about tefillah. There's no such thing as tefillah. There is something called hashaka. We'll talk about that when we get there. But I carefully formulated, I said, there's no tefillah for ochel mashkim and klei cheres. There is hashaka just for mayim.
Okay.
Okay.
Something a little more peripheral also is in terms of the idea of Beis Shammai issuing all those decrees.
Yes.
Couldn't Beis Hillel later come when they had a majority and repeal all of them?
Ah, ein based in Yachal Levat Del Tiri based in Chavera Ela ein came Gadim Men B'Chachma Minyan. But I what's that?
They can't prove they're better B'Chachma Minyan.
Well, you know, they say the debate was about Beis Hillel said they were the rogue, Beis Shammai said they were smarter. I don't know if Beis Hillel is masking that part. The truth is, there's Yerushalmi that says there's a whole big machlokas are shown. What does Yud Ches Davar mean? There's Yerushalmi that says that they shed blood that day, and that's why the tradition was received that we never revoke the Yud Ches Davar. Any of the outs can revoke, but this is a different sugya. This is Hilchas Mamrim sugya about one based and could overturn a previous based in decision. But yeah, okay, fine. I will allow questions.